You're listening to Radio Caravan with Scott Hayes and Robert Palmer. And reporter Megan Jamerson.
Laguna Beach.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
If it's 8 o'clock Saturday morning, this must be Radio Caravan. I'm Scott Hayes.
And I'm Robert Palmer.
And welcome. And Robert, what's been going on in your life, by the way? What's been happening in your world?
Well, lots of fun stuff. We were out last night seeing one of our favorite musicians, Sean Jones, was down at Stillwater rocking it with his full band. And we're going to play one of his tunes here in a little bit. But just a tremendous musician. He was on the show last week. He's been rocking it for over 25 years. Lives up in Ventura, drives down to Orange County, plays down here a lot. Probably had five or six of the most amazing guitars I've ever seen. Just tremendous musician. A shout-out to Sean for being a friend of the show.
And we saw him a couple of nights or last week or whenever it was at Lucille's, and he did an acoustic set, which I thought was great.
He did, and he gave a shout-out to KX93.5, and surprisingly, the room knew who it was. And there was a big big round of applause. So
is that true?
It was indeed.
How funny is that? That's cool. All right, so why don't we start with our typical police blotter section. Megan, you want to lead us on?
Today's police blotter.
Laguna Beach. Urban utopia. Heaven on earth. Maybe not. Think again. It really is a cesspool of crime, as we all know. Here are some of the things that have been going on this last week you might not have known about. Monday, February 17th, there was a report of a man staggering incoherently down the street. Mr. Thomas Patrick Compte, 49, of San Diego, was arrested. Five outstanding warrants, apparently all for staggering.
By the way, did we just read his name?
We did, and it's in the paper, so I can read it.
Well, okay.
I didn't just make it up.
Okay.
Okay, this is my what the fuck. Oh, pardon me.
No.
Now look what you made me do. You got me all upset. This is my what the item. All right,
here we go. Did we bleep that out?
We will.
Okay.
Okay, grand theft. A woman reported that four hooligans on paddle boards floated up to her house, purposely stole her dinghy, and sank it.
Wow.
Who would do that?
I don't know.
Who would do that? I have no idea. And finally, what's the buzz going on here? A bomb threat on Forest Avenue.
Ooh,
a woman
good.
Overheard but apparently misinterpreted a discussion between two people, which led to the police calling in the bomb squad and shutting down a store.
Huh.
Turned out it was a grocery bag.
The alleged bomb was a grocery bag.
Yes, she apparently misheard what they were saying.
I was just going to say, how can you miss her hear a bomb threat?
Well,
I
mean, she said she had brie and she thought she said bomb. I don't know. Whole Foods has some very exotic things out there. So I have no idea what they were doing over there.
Is that it on the police blotter? Because we do have our East Coast reporter, Mark Lisenby. Mark, are you on the air?
Scott, can you hear me?
Mark, we can hear you. Welcome, of course, always to Radio Caravan. I know you're a huge fan, yes?
Absolutely. I'm a very large fan.
And
what do you weigh in at there, buddy?
Oh, hush.
Hey, so we like to get sort of the East Coast version of police blotter. What do you got going on out there?
Well, before I report the heinous crimes from the Atlanta area, I just have to say happy birthday, Scott.
Thank you, Mark. It's actually not till tomorrow, but thank you for saying that.
Well, I've got a story about a grocery store as well.
Amazing.
That I think is a good reason to have the restrooms in the front of the store. Because a man was arrested after officers were called to a grocery store regarding an intoxicated man who came into the store and then urinated on the conveyor belt at register number 5.
Oh, wow.
Number 5. Was that his favorite? Did he always tend to like number 5, or was that just random?
Well,
I'm not sure. They didn't follow up with anything on that, Robert.
That's not the
conveyor belt too. That's like waist high, isn't it? I mean, that's above tip. I mean, you'd have to be standing on a box or something to do that.
Well, maybe he wasn't height challenged. Maybe he was a tall man.
All right. Well, that's interesting. What else you got?
I got a couple things. A specialty store in Atlanta. The victim left a petty cash envelope under the front counter of the business. When the victim returned the following day, she noticed that the envelope and the cash were missing. Although she wasn't sure, who did it. The victim did tell the police that an employee had not showed up for work for 2 days after the theft and had not answered the phone.
Ooh, and the plot thickens. You got one more?
I do.
Okay.
Someone rang a person's doorbell and disappeared. When police arrived, they found a delivered package on the doorstep.
Scary.
It is. That's about all I got, though.
I don't get it, though. Was the delivered package something dangerous, or was it just like FedEx or something, delivering a package?
Yeah, a delivered package. It was. You got to fill in the blank there, but I think there was no crime. I think this was just a person who was lonely and wanted the police to come say hello.
All right, very nice. Mark Lisenby, Atlanta, Georgia, my brother-in-law, thank you so much for calling in, man, and say hi to everybody back east for us, would you please?
We'll do it. You guys have a great show.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it, buddy. Megan, do we have Max online? I'm curious.
We don't yet.
We don't yet. Okay, can we move then to sort of, you put together, Megan, a short little segment for us. You want to kind of explain what's going on with this?
Sure. I, after our lovely co-host here.
Wait, is that me you're talking about,
no,
or Robert?
Oh, Robert.
Well, that's
Sorry.
Interesting.
I'm the lovely co-host.
Now, why is that? Well, how did that come
about?
You're
the spraggly co-host.
After in our first meeting, he asked me if I would sort of represent the hipster culture here on the show.
Right.
And it's kind of like one of those things where I was like, what does that even mean? Like, you hear it a lot, but
yeah,
kind of wanted to investigate it a little more. So I went out and about and chatted with some people in Orange County just to see what that scene's all about.
That sounds great.
I can play that now.
Let's do it. Let's
Your
hear
hipster
it.
Report.
Megan Jamerson, hipster report.
Yeah, it's considered the very clean-cut, like, apple pie part of, you know, Southern California.
That's Taryn Horachek of Tustin describing Orange County. Despite the region's reputation as being all things shiny and new, there is an established subculture among 20 to 30-year-olds lurking below, and some have labeled it hipster.
See, I don't really know what a hipster is.
Brian Molina, lifelong resident of Costa Mesa, brings up an excellent point. The term hipster is thrown around with increasing frequency, but its definition is elusive and ever-changing. So how do you know a hipster when you see one?
It's kind of the way they dress, more artsy. It's hard to explain. But if you see one, I'm like, oh, that guy's a hipster.
To add to Molina's observation, I do a little digging. These members of the millennial generation are educated, and they represent the anti-cool. They know what's cool before we know it exists. They listen to indie music. They have independent political views, support local businesses, buy organic, ride fixed-gear bikes. Basically, anything alternative goes. The list is also endless when it comes to looks. You have the hipsters who wear unusual clothing that gives off the air that they just don't care how they appear, but most likely it took effort and planning to pull together. And then you have the dapper dudes with beards and handlebar mustaches, and women with bangs and 1950s pinup style hair, retro glasses, skinny jeans, flannel, work boots, fingers covered in rings and earthy accessories, and basically anything vintage with a modern twist is also hipster. Oh, and don't forget, visible tattoos are a must, and a skill in the handmade artsy-craftsy tradesman world is a bonus. Wow, looking at this list, is there anything that isn't defined as hipster? The other funny thing is that members of this group won't label themselves as hipster, because the term itself is used as an insult to describe the overly trendy person, which is so not hipster. So where might we find one of these brave individualists?
Have you been to the Anti-Mall?
Molina is referring to The Lab, an anti-mall shopping center in Costa Mesa that has been labeled as a hipster haunt. This is where Horachek works. So is she herself a hipster?
Yeah, unfortunately. I'm all about the indie music and, you know, interesting, trendy stuff, little tattoos.
Horachek likes that Costa Mesa supports the arty scene, and it's becoming the norm in Orange County for 20-somethings to pursue their own path in style and design. But if what Horachek sees is becoming the norm, is anyone really a hipster anymore? If it's cool to be different, then as Molina says...
I mean, that in itself, I think, is a trend, isn't it?
So really, this is all about being cool, which us Americans are undoubtedly obsessed with.
You know, at one point, that was being a cheerleader, but now it's being being a cool kid, which is being ahead of the curve, which means everybody's trying to figure out the new cool thing before everyone else.
Horacek says this can get annoying because it has the potential to turn into a really contrived way of being. As the millennial generation blossoms into adulthood, some say the value of meaning and authenticity is of especially high importance to them. And one could say that this hipster culture is the result of this desire, but on steroids. Being authentic and following your individual tastes is a wonderful message. But this anti-cool trend is an addicting race where to win, you must be the best at being different. And that all sounds painfully difficult, especially in our age of social media and instant access to new images and ideas. And trends happen fast, and things don't stay new for very long. The only solution to stay sane is to just be yourself. And if whatever you're doing ends up being cool, then congrats.
That was pretty good.
Wow, very nice. Megan, I mean, you made us look professional. I was well produced. You did all of that yourself.
Yes, I did.
You scripted it out. You interviewed the people on the street. You weaved it all together. You added in the music.
I did.
You balanced out the sounds. You did all of that work. How long did that process take? I'm curious.
Quite a few hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took me, I would say, a week or two to just sort of get my head around what I wanted to even say.
Right.
And then chatted with the people, and then I had to think about it for a while to figure out the story.
So, yeah. I mean, honestly, just exceptional work. Your voice sounds beautiful on the air, by the way.
Thank you.
And I just thought that was a great job, yeah?
It was very hip.
Yeah.
You're still on, but it's a little staticky.
Can you do one of those a week?
We'll see what I can do.
Because they take a lot of time, don't they?
Yeah. It's time and planning, so
wow.
Get the ball rolling.
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be able to put something like that together, Robert. Would you?
Well, maybe I could, but I don't think you could.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Thank you, Robert. All right. Hey, let's move on to the next section. Megan, thank you. Beautiful work.
We do have Max on the air if
Excellent.
We want to get into technology.
Let's do it.
Good morning,
can we put him on, Max?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good. Are you on a cell phone or something?
I'm in a room right now. I can leave it. One second.
It sounds a little shallow.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, better. Much better. So Max Tech, our San Francisco reporter, we missed you last week, and we had a little glitch in the phone system, so we apologize for that.
Yeah, no worries. I got some sleep, so I can't complain.
So what's going on in the tech world, man? Help us out. What do we need to know?
Is it right? Well, first off, I'd like to congratulate Megan on her report. That was amazing.
It was.
There we go.
She's smiling.
She's blushing.
So I actually separated my segments into three categories.
Okay.
Things you should know about, things you should buy, and things you shouldn't know about. I'll go ahead and start with the things you should know about. I don't know if you know this, Scott, but Robert has an amazing, like, superpower where he can speed read and go through a Tom Clancy book in, like, 2 hours.
Really? Is that true, Robert?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you take the Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics course?
I taught her.
And do you actually read and understand, or you just skim?
I read.
So if somebody actually read the book, you could have an in-depth discussion with them about that.
I could.
We'll have to try that on air and see if that works. All right, go on.
So a Boston-based startup company named Spritz has developed a new way of displaying text on a new way of displaying text that shows a one word that rapidly changes. This can boost our reading speeds to about 230 words per minute to 500 even 1,000 words per minute. That makes reading a 200-page novel possible in just under an hour. I've actually tried this on the website. You go to the spritz.com or sprintsinc.com. You enter, like, a website you want to read. So I just entered, like, a Google article, and then it starts displaying a single word really fast, and it changes. And they have, like, one of the words is highlighted red, which I don't know how it works with the brain, but I can vouch that I was speed reading for one of the first times.
And you were comprehending.
Yeah, that was the most amazing part. I wasn't able to speak as fast as I was reading it, but I was comprehending everything it was saying.
So is it like the subconscious picking up the words and you just sort of gather or understand what you're reading? Is that how it works?
Exactly. That's how I think.
Now, what, give us the website again. I'm curious.
Spritzinc.com.
Spell it for us, because I'm having a hard time understanding.
That's a new letter. S-P-R-I-T-Z.
.com.
Inc.com.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. That's wonderful. Robert?
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. What's next on the list?
Well, in Scandinavia, they have developed a talking dog device that uses brainwave reading technology.
You need this. You can't find your Volvo, ask the dog. He'll tell you where it is.
How's it work?
It just uses brainwaves on a headset that's on the dog. And it can compute simple phrases like "I'm hungry" or "I don't like that."
That sounds a little gimmicky to me.
Sounds like a guy.
So does the dog talk, or you translate? He understands.
So I don't think it actually is taking words out of the dog's mouth. I think it's just taking almost moods that the dog's feeling. And so, like, if the dog's hungry, you kind of see that, like. I would say hormone-wise, I don't know.
It's very male.
Not a scientist, that's why I'm doing the tech talk. Next subject.
Yeah, Robert, hold on, Max, one sec. Robert, introduce our guest, because he wants to speak up, and I want to get him on the mic, so we got him on the mic.
We've got Clay Daniels in here today, founder of Cuckoo and many other businesses, local Lagunaite and good friend. Welcome, Clay. Good morning.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Scott.
Now you can hear yourself.
I can hear myself, which is very reassuring because I listen to myself all day long, and now someone else is listening to me, so I feel good about that.
Sadly, I have to listen to you a lot, too.
Finally, others are listening. Yeah. It's taken a long time.
Well, I felt bad you wanted to contribute, but we weren't hearing you,
I had a contribution to Laguna Beach Blotter simply in front of Laguna Beach, Laguna Fitness. This week, someone put a license plate on a orange Jeep and forgot to put the tags on, and Cora got a ticket. Of course, that person was me. So, so there was another crime in town. It was, of course, I am the criminal. But
so this is a plea for forgiveness?
Yeah, a plea for forgiveness and a shout-out to Laguna Fitness. And, so when you drive by that truck, notice the tags. They're perfectly placed.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right, Max, what else you got on the tech world?
So the things you should buy, next segment. Before I introduce the product, I'd like to mention that, I don't know if you guys noticed, by the way, hey Clay.
Hey Max, what's up?
What's up? A while back, there was this phone block concept that went viral on Facebook and Twitter last year. The concept was this modular phone and it was just a YouTube video, like a little concept video, of a modular phone that instead of buying a smartphone the way it is, you could take little blocks on and off. So say you wanted extra battery power on your phone. You could just simply stick an extra battery on the back. You wanted a better camera, you could just take off the extra battery and put a bigger camera on it. And the idea was, everyone loved it, but engineers around the world decided the concept was impossible, and the idea quickly faded away. All the engineers in the world, except those in Mountain View, California, aka Google, they have actually developed this modular phone technology and are going to be selling it by the end of the year for starting at $50. And they didn't even stop there. They'll be teaching people how to make their own smartphones this April.
Wow.
Google at it again.
That's amazing. What's the word? I get in the back of my head, I'm thinking there's some facility being created in San Pedro Harbor that Google... What is that?
Oh, so when it first happened... so it's the Google Barge. And when
the
it
Google
first
Barge
happened,
is up in San Francisco.
San Francisco, is it?
Yes, and there's one in New York, too. Top secret.
Yes. But so when they first thought, go ahead.
Sorry. No, what goes on there, Max? Do you know?
Well, we thought, like, suspicious NSA, like, stuff were going on. No, it's just a museum exhibit. It's just floating right now.
All right. I don't know
about
Google's
that. Yeah, Google's trying to bring exhibits from the East Coast and West Coast to show people how their technology will improve the world.
All right. You got anything else?
Yeah. I'd say one of the biggest problems in Laguna Beach is not having enough storage on your iPhone because of all the selfies you take. Well, Scott, you don't need to work anymore. Mophie iPhone cases.
Robert does that all the time.
Yeah, seriously. Robert created the selfie.
He's a walking selfie.
He walks around with this giant Nikon and, like, with all his arm strength, reaches as far as he can and gets a nice little selfie.
That's true.
That is true.
So Mophie iPhone cases, known to have high-quality cases with chargeable batteries inside, are the first and it's kind of surprising it's taken this long, but Apple hasn't allowed it till now, are selling cases called the Mophie Space Pack, which offers 16 and 32 extra gigabytes of storage.
Well, there you go.
So you just plug that in the back of your phone and selfie yourself to death.
Right on.
That sounds
exactly,
good.
Exactly, yeah.
You got
and it doesn't sound, technology-wise, that isn't that amazing, but Apple has not allowed anyone to make that kind of case to this point. So,
Great.
Yeah.
And then I'll finish off with things you shouldn't know. First thing we shouldn't know.
Should or shouldn't know?
Shouldn't know.
Okay.
Do not
and
know
this. And this one's for Megan, because apparently interns at companies like Twitter and LinkedIn are making around $8,000 a month.
Wow.
Jeez.
Thanks for sharing that, Matt.
So I should leave for Twitter then.
She just ran.
There goes her. Yeah.
Nice knowing you, Megan.
See you guys.
I'll be honest, though. I think Megan could get one of those jobs if she wanted. She's extremely competent. So.
Oh, thanks.
Is that it, Max?
Last thing.
All right.
So America's favorite aerospace company, Boeing, has developed a black cell phone.
Oh, I heard about this. This sounds awesome.
Yeah, for government use in collaboration with AT&T and Verizon to self-destruct when needed information it can be destroyed.
Wow. Simply amazing.
So like if you leave it at someone's house the next morning, you can have it destroyed so they can't go through your photos.
Yeah, your wife snooping through your phone, you hit self-destruct.
Am I the only one wondering why America's favorite aerospace company is developing self-destructing bomb phones?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. I was like, what are they doing involved in that? But
Max, always interesting, my friend. Thank you so much. That's Max Tech, our San Francisco reporter. We're hoping you'll call back again next week, yes?
Yeah, the pleasure's mine.
Thanks, my friend. Have a good one.
Have a good one, Maxwell.
Thanks, and happy early birthday, Scott.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mark, that's right. Hey, listen, also in the studio this morning now, we've got a new section we're starting here, and this sort of came at the suggestion of Robert. We had a guest in a few weeks ago, Jill Harvey, and we got a lot of interest in Jill for what she had to say and her beautiful on-air voice, and she's going to get real close to that microphone when we get to chatting with her in just a moment. And we're going to call this section right now Healthy Lifestyle Living, and this is our healthy lifestyle coach, Jill Harvey. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
So how did you feel about doing this, putting this together for us this morning? Did that come together pretty smoothly?
Yeah, it came together smoothly. I look forward to the journey, so that'll be fun. We can break it down in segments and demystify and simplify being well.
Yeah, that sounds great. And then we talked about what might be a good opening topic.
Right.
And what did we come up with? I forget.
Portion control. But now I'm a little worried because it was just for humans. I think we need it for dogs now. Because these animals are going to run around now, as Max said, letting us know when they're hungry. And that'll be all the time. We're going to have to watch them.
So portion control, what does that mean exactly?
Basically, we are a nation overfed and undernourished.
Right.
And we have portion distortion going on. So over the past 20 years, portions have more than doubled.
Wow.
So we're really out of control in the eating. So we really look at, you know, what we should eat, what we shouldn't. But what we really need to look at now is the quantity. And if we start there, that's a good place. So just backing off, stepping back from our plate, taking a moment. And as humans, we tend to overestimate how much food we need and underestimate what we actually ate.
Any sense of why we're doubling our portions? Is there any sort of research on that?
Yeah, I think it's commerce. I really think that, you know, like fruits and vegetables, they really have a very small profit margin, where when you get into the processed foods that are fatty and sugary and salty, those are shelf-stable, they last a long time, they're quick, they're convenient, and they make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and the U.S. food industry is all over that, and the government, you know, subsidizes a lot of our farms that are corn and soy producing.
McDonald's gives away their hamburgers, so you come in and buy their their french fries and their Diet Cokes. It's worth the money.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Well, it's like going to the movie theaters, and you can get the medium-sized Coke, or for 50 cents more, you can get that extra large. But what happened to the small Coke at the movie theater?
Right.
It doesn't exist.
Same with the popcorn and everything else.
Right, just say no.
Yeah, just say no.
No supersizing.
But why don't we say no? Apparently, we're not saying no.
I think there's a point, you know, this is a huge point. Emotionally, I think that people are gratified by food. Food is great. But I think we also aren't taking the time. It takes 15 to 20 minutes to signal the brain that you're full. And so we eat fast, we move right. fast, we want convenience, and you may have kids, you have jobs, and that's all understandable, but you have to look at the long-term effect of this and putting the onus back on the individual.
Yeah.
You know, that we're all accountable.
Is fast food addicting, by the way? I hear that yeah. fast food is addicting. And is that
yeah.
true?
Yeah, that's what I've heard, too, that high fructose corn syrup is actually an appetite stimulant.
Wow.
So, you know, we just want to become really mindful and become very cautious mm-hmm. and future-looking at our health.
Great.
You know, we have type 2 diabetes on the rise. Obesity is at the biggest it ever has been. And it's, you know, if you travel out of the country, portions are small.
Yeah.
You go to France, they give you a little right. piece of chicken and right. a little bit of potato, and it's like, wow, right. that's a portion.
So how do we know when it's the appropriate portion and when it's not, when it's double the amount it should be and when we should half our portions?
Right. So this is a really good way to segue into useful tools.
Okay.
So when you look at a label on a box, it says serving size. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to eat that amount or less or more. It's just giving you an estimate that that serving size has this many calories and so forth for that serving. Mm-hmm. But if you ate something that was two servings in a box and each serving had 300 calories and you were unaware of that and you ate the whole box, you're now consuming 600 calories.
Yeah.
You know, the same with those drinks in the cans. You know, you have 2.5 to 3 servings in those big cans, but people are not aware of that. So just become aware of the serving size. And a serving size is different than a portion. So the serving size on a package and a label is a recommended serving. It's giving you a base idea based on a 2,000-calorie diet. This is what's included. But a portion is the amount you choose to eat. So monitoring that.
And just this week, the FDA is starting to address that problem. You may see they're redoing the way they do labels.
Right.
Right.
Historically, you would buy a package of Fritos, and they would say, this is 3 servings. Well, the reality is it's not.
It's not.
The person would eat it in one sitting.
Absolutely.
So now they're being more fair with that. Or a donut is you'd actually eat the whole donut, or you might eat 2 donuts. So they're redoing both the entire portion and the portion which they think you might eat. So if you get a 20-ounce
yes.
Diet Coke now, it'll give the full reading for the 20-ounce as well as what they think might be a portion, 8 ounces.
Right.
And hopefully that'll be helpful.
Hopefully.
The reality is I think fat people are going to still gobble that stuff down.
Absolutely. I mean, a bagel, if you look at 20 years ago, looked like a little mini muffin now. It looks like a little mini bagel. People would laugh at it compared to the
right.
size now. So it's the food industry that's really, we're going to put some of the blame on them.
Yeah.
Because they're putting it out there because we have choices to make, but the choices they're giving us are huge.
But and consumers seem to love that.
You also said it's, I think this is sort of a theme today, individual responsibility. And
completely.
you don't have to drink that whole Coke. You can put yeah. the Cheetos away.
And where is the individual responsibility?
Yeah. And
I mean,
so
people love Outback. They love
be,
Fridays. They love saying, boy, look at all the food
right.
I got. They you love know. Buffets.
Getting more for their money.
Legislating yeah. that or labeling that. Is
well, you
again,
can't legislate that necessarily,
can't.
No.
Well, Bloomberg tried.
And even labeling
right, exactly.
it. Even labeling it wouldn't stop necessarily people from doubling their portions.
Yeah.
What tips, Jill, could you offer?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So if we all looked at the palm of our hand,
right.
and we're going to go easy there, but the palm of the hand
yes.
minus the fingers is your protein serving, right?
That's a good visual.
It's a really great visual. They
yeah.
say a deck of cards, but I like the palm of the hand. It's individual for each
right.
of us. You know, you have Michael Jordan and, you know,
yeah.
these athletes. My palm is too small. That would be a small serving of meat. If you cup your hand and you had like half of a baseball in there, that's the serving of a half a cup of cooked pasta or
uh-huh.
cooked rice. Two hands cupped are a good serving of vegetables. You can have more of that. And then the thumb from tip to base is the size of hard cheese.
Wow.
So, yeah. And the tip
wow.
of your thumb would be like a serving size of olive oil or butter. But these give us tools, you know, to just really say, okay, if you're eyeballing your plate, they also have portionware. You can go online and find plates and bowls and cups
right.
and portion control that way.
That's amazing.
So to remember this, you write all these words on your hands?
Yeah.
What? It's kind of strange
right,
walking
right,
around
right.
all these words right. on your hands.
Draw pictures of food.
Exactly.
Yeah, on your
hands. And cheese is okay.
Yeah, you know, we'll get into that in another segment.
Yeah,
I think when you're eating cheese,
yeah,
you
cheese.
Want to make sure it's hormone-free.
What is cheese? You
ever seen an unhealthy rat?
What is cheese?
How those little guys
really?
Get around?
Yeah, cheese is one of those
bizarre.
I think when dining out, when you're dining out too, so a friend of mine owns a restaurant, and last week he said that they intentionally make the portions big, but they don't expect you to eat them in one sitting. They want you to take it home, so the next day they have a double sale. You look in the refrigerator, there's name again, there's the food. That's great. I mean, you do want to cut your food in half, but the next day you're eating that same food, and if it's not good food, if it's lasagna, if it's a big, you're eating that again. So, you know, I would say share your food at a restaurant, order appetizers with a salad. What do you think?
Yeah, the simplest way, I think, to diet is just split a meal. You get all the food, everything you wanted, and you've literally cut your calories in half. Right. And then secondly, if you just don't eat it like a gobbling hound,
right,
you know, like a dog does, especially a
Swedish
dog.
Yeah. The Swedish dog.
So say, I tell you, I'm hungry,
not only am I hungry, but I'm still hungry.
Exactly. But if you just eat slower, you really fill up a lot faster.
Absolutely.
You tend not to eat nearly as much.
It's being mindful. Like, I'll work with my clients and friends and say, you know, when you have food on your plate, look at it. Is everything on there nourishing, or is it just satisfying that motion, you know, that emotional need, or the taste you have, or never let yourself become starving.
Yeah.
You know, eat mini meals along the way, eat healthy portions, but remembering that every time we shop, we're voting. So every time that barcode scans across that cash register, beep, beep, you know, we're voting. And so we're telling the U.S. food industry and the government what we want. And so we need to vote healthier, buy healthy things in the store.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Do you have anything else to add here?
You know, I think, you know, and the serving size again. So this was a really good visual. So a client of mine, I went to her house in the morning, and I said, what did you have for breakfast? She said, a bowl of cereal. And I asked her to pour me a bowl. It was a huge bowl. I mean, it was
salad bowl.
Spilling over. Right. Yeah. And so when we looked at the serving size, she had about 3 or 4 servings of cereal.
Was it a healthy cereal, though?
Yeah, it's
sure,
healthy,
Frosted
but
Flakes,
anything healthy. But even healthy
is too
cumulative,
much.
Right?
Oh, okay.
Everything is cumulative, so you have to look at it that way. Just be mindful, slow down, be grateful. I mean, we are a nation of abundance, and we should be very grateful that we have that, but also appreciate that we need to slow down the epidemic of type 2 diabetes and obesity and become healthier as a nation.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent, Jill.
Thank
Excellent
you.
Job. Round of applause for Jill,
there
by
you.
The way.
Hey.
First time on the air
Thank
doing
you.
Our healthy tips.
Healthy that was tips.
Jill Harvey.
Slap your proteins together.
Yeah. Hey, Jill, tell us again where you work.
Oh, the Renaissance Club Sport in Aliso Viejo.
Very nice. Yeah,
come take a class.
And Jill's going to be visiting us hopefully every weekend, giving us some healthy tips, whether it's in the studio or remotely,
Absolutely.
Depending on your schedule.
Great.
And thank
I
you.
I look forward to it.
Thank you again, young lady. Very
okay.
nice.
Okay. Have a good day.
Okay, let's move on to rock legends. Are we about ready for that, Robert? This is your section, and I believe I've heard recently from many sources that this is one of their favorite, if not the favorite part of Radio Caravan.
Well, that's a sick group of puppies, but I'm glad to hear that.
Legends of rock.
That's funny. All right, well, this show goes out to my sister Rebecca, who's one of the biggest fans of this gentleman, as am I. Rogers Nelson was born on I left out his first name. That would be Prince.
Wait a minute, real Roger Nelson?
Rogers Nelson. His first name is Prince.
Never knew that.
Roger.
Prince Rogers Nelson was born June 7th, 1958 in beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota, where it's currently 5 degrees below zero. He was born to John Nelson and Maddie Shaw, both of whom were musicians. When asked why he named his son Prince, he said, I wanted him to do everything I never could, so I wanted him to be a prince. Sadly, his name growing up was Skipper, but somehow he escaped that name and returned to Prince. Can you imagine seeing the artist formerly
known as Skipper?
So that did not happen. Quite the contrary. Prince went on to be one of the most prolific artists in history, still going strong today. He's released hundreds upon hundreds of songs, not only in his own name, but with others. He has an amazing 7 Grammy Awards, a Golden Globe, an Academy Award, and was inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame in 2004, the very first year he was eligible. Rolling Stone has ranked him number 28 on the greatest artists of all time. Well, Prince released his first album, You, on April 7th, 1978. He held out for years to sign with the studio because he wanted unprecedented control. He wanted, as a new artist, the ability to produce, write, direct his own albums. And he finally got that, ultimately, from Warner. He then went on, in October of 1979, to do his self-entitled album, Prince, which had his first big hit, I Want to Be Your Lover. Tell you a little trivia about this song. When Prince was recording this album, I was down the hall recording the week after he finished it. And we had not known Prince at the time, but we were based out of Minneapolis in my band. And we asked the engineers who they'd been working with, and they said, quote, some pompous little black kid. I said, what's his name? They said, Prince. I said, isn't he a good? They said, he's phenomenal. And he did indeed play every instrument, 27 separate instruments on this album.
Wow. What was the name of your band again, Robert?
We didn't do quite so well. Keystone, yeah.
Keystones. So but there is an album out there of yours.
Cookhouse Studios. If you look under Prince's biography, you'll see the Cookhouse Sessions. And that's where he got his start, back at the same studios. Yanni was our, his producer was our producer, and Yanni did his album the week after us.
Wow, good company.
3 years later, they all had sold millions. I had sold a couple thousand. I decided maybe I ought to be a lawyer. So believe it or not, when the song came out to promote it, someone talked him into going on the Dick Clark Show on American Bandstand to promote it. And if you can imagine seeing that. At the end of the interview, Dick Clark looked over him and goes, so you guys are from Minneapolis of all places. And Prince was not happy with that diss and waved at him in dismay and refused to speak to him and walked off the show.
Wow.
And if you see Prince today, he rarely says anything during an interview. Well, next along came Dirty Mind, which got a lot of critical acclaim for him, one of my personal favorites. And you may recall that during the Dirty Mind tour, that was back in 1981, where he opened for the Rolling Stones in Los Angeles, California.
Wow. There was a concert.
Showed up in his garb, which was not really customary at a Rolling Stone concert, including glitter and hide tights and all kinds of things. And you may recall how he was received by the crowd. They threw bottles at him. He was chased off the stage.
Wow.
When he opened for the Rolling Stones. That led to his next album that got him a lot of play, Controversy. Blending jazz and funk and R&B, he created an amazing style that today is still one of my favorites. Well, Prince kept on going strong, and then he finally came out with his mega hit in 1982. A double album, which broke almost every record he'd ever done. Sold over 3 million copies. Indeed, the title track, very few know, was A Rage Against Nuclear Proliferation. It also became a theme song at the Millennium, where almost every party played this at midnight on December 31, 1999. Prince, of course, being fascinated with the color purple. Indeed, Paisley Park, or Purple Paisley Park, is the name of his home. And it led him to write one of his most amazing albums, and quite frankly, one of the worst movies ever made, self-entitled Purple Rain. The album sold 13 million copies, and it was on the number one chart for a remarkable 24 consecutive weeks. He won the Academy Award for this song. The movie, of course, won nothing itself other than the song, and deservedly so. Prince was not a convincing tough biker.
That's true.
Interestingly, it's very true. It's quite terrifying. Yeah, he scared the hell out of me. It was on this album the song Darling Nikki came out, and you may know what Darling Nikki created. Tipper Gore heard her daughter listening to that song and was appalled by its lyrics. And put together a group that to this day slaps on every such album adult content not suitable for children.
Wow.
So, Prince, thank you for that. And more importantly, if you're a football fan, it was in 2007 when the Indianapolis Colts not only gave Peyton Manning a Super Bowl ring, an MVP, a defeat over the Chicago Bears, but in front of 75,000 people, Prince played the halftime show. And if you remember it, at the end of the show when he busted into Purple Rain as if God had cued it, rain began descending upon the stage, and he played the song in a pouring downpour in Miami, Florida. About the same time, he started a side project, which many didn't really view as a side project. It's called The Time. You may remember Morris Day. As it turns out, Prince wrote every one of those songs and played every one of those instrument parts. Morris Day went on to have a very successful career with those four albums all on his own. Prince went solo again without a band and did Sign of the Times, Love Sexy, and again, one of the worst, most god-awful albums ever made. He was convinced by Tim Burton to do a 9-track soundtrack for the movie Batman, including the wonderful song Bat Dance, which you've ever seen, you will probably never sleep again. Simply, simply dreadful. Well, Prince began to move on, and as you know, he had lots of problems with Warner Brothers. He hated it. He began releasing album after album just to spite them, to try and get out of his contract. He even wrote the word slave on his face, adopted the symbol so that he wouldn't even be called Prince. He became the artist formerly known as Prince. Ultimately, they began to mend ways, and he began to get his act back together, putting together the beautiful album and song, Diamonds and Pearls.
This will be the day.
In 2004, Prince appeared at the Grammy Awards, and guess who he sang with? None other than Beyoncé. The following month, the very first time that he was eligible, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. His concert that year grossed an amazing $87 million, the largest in U.S. history at that point. He played 96 concerts in a very short period of time. To this day, he's one of the most prolific artists, playing literally everywhere, every day he can play. He recently did a show a few years ago at the Forum where he played 24 nights in a row. It was truly extraordinary.
Wow.
I had the pleasure of seeing him from the second row, and in the front row was Justin Timberlake. And watching Justin Timberlake rock out to Prince for 3 hours was one of the coolest things that I've ever seen. Oh, by the way, Magic Johnson's seats were directly behind me. That also made that.
How'd you manage?
I don't know, but he wasn't happy at all. As many know, he later became baptized as a Jehovah's Witness in 2001. He's a very strict Jehovah's Witness.
I didn't know that.
Yep, very strict. He doesn't drink. He's a pretty decent guy. He's also a vegetarian, and his probably proudest title of all is in 2006, he was voted the world's sexiest vegetarian by PETA. He, of course, is a big supporter of Minneapolis Vikings, which many did not know. And to this day, he still resides in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in Paisley Park. That is the story of Prince Rogers. Wow.
That's beautiful. Let's play that music a little louder for us, Megan. And you've been listening to, by the way, the radio host, formerly known as Robert. This is Radio Caravan. We're going to take a short 30-second break, and we're going to come back and chat with our guests.
Beautiful, Rogers beautiful. Nelson.
You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. This, of course, is Radio Caravan. Robert, do you have a couple of little tidbits to add before we move to our guest?
I do. I've got my person of the week, and that would be Girl Scout Daniel Lee. Daniel Lee is currently a very rich little Girl Scout. You may have known that she decided to sell her Girl Scout cookies outside a pot dispensary in San Francisco, California.
A brilliant businesswoman in the making.
She sold over 117 boxes in 2 hours.
Very good targeting.
She's a very ambitious woman. Now, if you're bored on the week, and Clay was saying earlier, there's so much to do in Orange County, but we do not, sadly, have Stripperoki in Orange County. And you can now go up to the Dragonfly in Santa Monica and go to Stripperoki.
And you may want to define that for us.
Well, as you're busting out your Van Halen song, behind you is April grinding on you. Literally, there is a stripper on stage with you while you do karaoke.
Does that cost extra?
I believe it does.
I was under the impression as you were singing, you're stripping, no matter who it is.
Yeah, I would think
male or female.
More,
no, that would not be popular at all.
Okay.
This is team stripper karaoke.
Team stripper karaoke.
that would be even worse. Maybe working a game of Twister with some Manolo.
Is there a poll involved, or is this strictly freeform?
You know, they weren't that clear on there, but I'll get back to
you. So the story is still to be written.
It is indeed. And there is a story that sadly has been written, and that's the life story of one Harold Ramis.
One
of the most talented actor directors ever.
Absolutely.
Getting his start in Second City in Chicago, working with John Belushi, writing the wonderful lines for Animal House, including, did we lay down when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? No, we did not. We fought back.
Or to you, he was pre-law and pre-med. Of course, what is the difference?
Very little, of course. And when asked in Stripes if they were gay, he said, no, but we're willing to learn.
Yes.
He unfortunately died this week, but he's probably most famously known for not only Ghostbusters, but for my personal favorite, Caddyshack.
Oh, yeah.
A truly, truly amazing movie and an absolute masterpiece.
And I believe his last movie in that sort of period of his life was Groundhog Day, which is regularly now on top 100 lists. Not just top comedy, but it's seen as
one of the top
100 movies of all time.
I've seen it probably 10 times. I watch it every time it comes on.
It's a classic moral story, love story of a guy turning his life around. It's a wonderful film.
I agree.
It is indeed. And pretty much you cannot go on a golf course without hearing some drunken idiot bust into Cinderella story.
Yeah.
I don't know where. Former assistant greenskeeper.
Yeah. I think it's
about
just
to become the Masters champion.
Yeah.
He looks like a big. Oh, it's in the hole.
Right. Well, if you're playing today, I'm sure someone's going to say, I think it's just going to blow over.
Nama.
I think the worst is behind us.
Big hitter. Big hitter. The interesting thing I did not know is the movie was originally written as a coming-of-age story for Michael O'Keefe. He was supposed to be the focus and the center of the movie. Then they decided to cast the movie.
Right.
And they put in Murray, who did not have a single line written for him. Every single line was ad-libbed on site.
Wow.
For example, the guy getting a little gopher's pelt.
Yeah.
That was done online. All it said in the script was, Murray talks to gopher.
Right.
Scene with him in, what's his face, the cannonball scene?
Cannonball coming through.
Yeah, that's all ad-lib?
It's all ad-lib.
Wow. Yeah.
What about the Chevy Chase, you know, where he's...
We got a pool, we got a pond.
Pond would be good for you.
Pond be good for you. And Rodney Dangerfield had never done a movie before.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
Literally, they said when they were first on set, he yelled, action. Dangerfield looked at him and goes, what do you want me to do? That means move. That means start the movie. But a truly remarkable man in a remarkable movie. When they asked O'Keefe later if he felt kind of shut out after being cast, he said, look, let's face it, we were like the Marx Brothers, and I was just Zeppo.
You know, and you look at the people who are making comedy today, and you look at, like, the group that surrounds Judd Apatow, and he really was the Judd Apatow of his time. I mean, if you look at that string from Animal House to Groundhog Day and all the great Second City folks that came through, the Saturday Night Live folks. I mean, he really did set quite a high bar for comedy and the comedy that we're going and looking at today.
Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Much. And a little trivia for you. You may recall the famous scene where they're blowing up the gopher and the entire golf course is exploding.
That's true.
Turns out they forgot to tell the country club they were going to do that.
Yeah.
They surreptitiously brought in 3 gasoline trucks and blew the place to smithereens, spray painted it green, and did it again the following day for a second shot.
Only in Hollywood.
Music written by Kenny Loggins, I believe. Yes.
Yeah, that's a great Loggins.
Yeah. Team. Hey.
And the gopher, by the way, was
played by
animated by Mr. Zylstra, who also did Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And
I thought
a
it was,
of great
you know, famous actor. Didn't he play the gopher or someone? Was it actually animated?
It was an animated guy. Right.
Jim Carrey, maybe. Hey, Robert, Clay's here, man. Yeah. What do we want to chat about?
Well, Clay, a couple things. First of all, Clay is the founder of Cuckoo, a wonderful advertising agency specializing in medical products, and hopefully we can get to that. But we were having a little chat about Orange County culture or no culture. Many say Orange County is just a wasteland of culture, and it's all superficial, and there's really nothing of value here that you need to live in New York or Los Angeles if you want to have any class or culture. What say you, Clay?
Well, actually, it's interesting because I think Robert and I have gone back and forth on this, and I'm actually a Bay Area boy, and so oftentimes I speak to my friends up there, having moved to Southern California some 25, 30 years ago, and they'll say, when are you moving back? How can you stand it down there? I said, I'm never coming back. And I think the great misconception is really the term, you know, the Orange Curtain. And, years and years ago, Orange County was developed as by Irvine Company and seen as this planned community, and that it was very white bread and everything was very generic. And if you really spend time here, you'll find that this is not only culturally rich, but a great deal of culture that is now spread by companies in America around the world is actually originated here. I mean, surf culture is one of the most powerful commercial forces currently in markets today. And you look at, you know, you look up and down the coast here from Oakley to Quicksilver to Volcom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all here. And LA comes here to steal culture. San Diego comes here to steal culture. Santa Barbara, all these supposed surf capitals of the world, shunning Huntington Beach. But it really, from a commercial standpoint, it all really happens here. And you can see that really as you look through all those magazines, you look at television, you look at really what's happening here. And then, you know, Robert's very familiar with his involvement with theater here in Orange County. And you just go from the gallery scene, both here in Laguna, of course. But if you go to downtown Santa Ana, you know, the first Saturday of every month is Art Walk there, where you're walking through student galleries, students affiliated with both Chapman and other schools. And it is a hotbed of not just young art, but experimental art, whether you're looking at true fine art or sculpture or neon or whatever that might be, experimental theater. It's all really here. And, you know, the improv, I mean, there's anything you can get anywhere happens here. But I would say more than that, there are things created here that are then exported and others take the opportunity to claim as their own. And so it's a great, it's something that Orange County has as a brand should look at, because I think we are given short shrift on that. And I'm a great defender of Orange County. Love it here. Love the people. And actually love Laguna. I've lived pretty much everywhere here in Orange County, and Laguna is truly the gem. So happy to be here. Right down here in the next block near the orange truck.
It is indeed with the plate on it now.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And you've got almost every worldwide car company has an office based here, and most of their high-tech designs come from here, from BMW to Ford to everyone.
Yeah.
Medical products, food, clothing.
This is actually, I was at a conference this week, prevention of blindness, and a number of people that I'm associated with work in eye care, and this is actually considered the Silicon Valley of eye care, or ophthalmology, or advances in eye care. And the Gavin Herbert Institute over here at UCI is world-renowned. A number of people have put great time and resources against building this up, and there are more medical device and drug companies associated with eye care here in Orange County than anywhere in the world. Many of them are offshoots of Allergan. Many of the people running those companies and investing in those companies have their history somehow tied them back to Gavin Herbert at Allergan. But this is really the place, and that is, you know, the leading causes of preventable blindness, glaucoma, et cetera. There are devices and treatments being innovated here that are being shipped around the world that are saving sight. And that is a credit to really the thinkers and doers and investors here in Orange County.
I'm not feeling like such a loser living here
anymore. Hey, Clay, I hate to cut you off. We got just a couple of minutes left.
You got it.
And I want to get, though, to your business, because I really find it interesting. You want to explain, first of all, where your website can be found? And
Cuckoo is a healthcare branding advertising agency, and you can find us at itscuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
It's cuckoo.com. The company is called Cuckoo, but the website is www.itscuckoo.com. And really the genesis of Cuckoo is the idea that people buy healthcare differently now. And it really is to the individual mandate that you have you are your own healthcare practitioner. If you're not watching out for you, nobody is going to. And that's no discredit to physicians. Physicians are under tremendous pressure here to see more patients. They're getting paid less. They have to maintain certain levels of economic stability. They have to run a practice. They're business owners as well. But just like Julia was saying, you have to take personal responsibility for how you eat. You have to take personal responsibility for how your health care is delivered. Cuckoo helps people find others who have what they have, find those people who are cuckoo for particular products and services, connect them, and so you can learn about that.
Can Cuckoo help me find Cocoa Puffs?
You could. I'm sure there are people who are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs who are writing about it, blogging, and messaging about that. You go in there, we can help you find that.
How do you spell cuckoo?
Q-O-O-Q-O-O.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known that. I would not have known that.
But just a small portion of Cocoa
But that's Puffs. How people buy health care today.
All right. Hey, listen, we're running out of time. Clay, thanks for coming in, man. Maybe we can get you back some weekend again.
I'd love to come back and talk more Groundhog Day.
Thanks for coming in, brother.
You're a natural at this, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Hey, listen, we got to go. You've been listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. Up next is the Friendship Show, and this is Radio Caravan. I'm Scott Hayes.
Robert Palmer, jump on board.
Jump on board. Hey, next week our guest is Robert.
Sandra Hutchinson,
who is
Orange County Sheriff.
Very nice. It's going to be a great show. Okay, Megan, walk us out of here. A little music from Sean Jones. Excellent.
See how he would understand what I was going through. When I got out on my own, I found out for too long, the struggle makes you stronger.